Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Excited to have our guest returning to us after a year. I can't believe it's been that long. Joseph McCormick is our guest, marketing executive, entrepreneur, author, founder, and managing director, president of the Sheffield Company. And the book and the stuff we're going to be talking about is Being Brief. The book is Brief Practitioner Program, especially for managers. That's a new online course they have on the website, thebrieflab.com. And the book, Joe, what's the name of the book?
The book is called Brief, Make a Bigger Impact by Saying Less.
There we go. See, it wasn't in bold, and I missed it on my little prep sheet that Beth puts together for me. So, all right. So, listen, welcome back, Joe. For our listeners that missed your program before, a little bit about Joe. He received his Bachelor of Arts from Loyola University of Chicago, English Literature. So, we'll see that put to test in just a moment. Graduated with honors, and I was finding this out before we started the program. He's also fluent in Spanish, which that's really cool because that brings in a lot of the linguistics for what you're all about, Joe. So we'll be talking about how to be brief, and you'll see why we've asked Joe to come back. He's on a mission to help organizations master the art of the short story, and everybody I know has accused me at least once of just not being brief enough. Is there hope for me, Joe?
There's hope for everybody.
All right.
I think
God.
We found it's funny. The book came out about a year ago. There is a tremendous amount of interest in the topic. And what we're seeing a lot is managers and professionals that really want to just make a noticeable difference in small areas. But they realize that they can't make a massive change overnight, so they're focusing on a few specific things they can do to be better that could be noticeable and help their careers.
Excellent. Well, and that's why I wanted to mention the Brief Practitioner Program you have that is on your website, thebrieflab.com. I wanted to mention that right up front, online course, because you know people are looking to improve themselves, and obviously as the economy hopefully continues to improve, that being briefer, more effective in your management or whatever your communications are can only help you. And so what you're all about, Joe, is really helping people be more synced, be more efficient with their time. And this is something that people can use really in all walks of life. It's not just for managers. It's for business owners. It's for financial planners like me. It's for everybody. It seems like there's so many different applications.
The applications are really broad. And one of the things that we're waging a war on is just inattention and information overload. People are just flooded with information so much so that their brains just can't handle it and process. And we can't really stop that. That train has left the station. But what we can do is we can adapt as professionals, as individuals, and be better at getting to the point. And that doesn't mean being blunt. It means being more concise and more clear. And the applications are from people doing a job interview. You know, people are in a job interview, they get nervous, they tend to talk long. You're giving an important presentation to the board. You really need to capture their attention right out of the gate because they might tune out. Or even just people at home, you know, just after a long day and how's your day? And being able to sum things up in a way that can hold people's attention because people struggle. It's a societal issue, and brevity is one way of adapting and having people stand out.
I was hoping to get a license to be blunt, Joe, and you wrecked it for me now.
That could be another book.
License to blunt. I love it. Well, you know what? It's so funny, and I've got several application questions I'm going to ask you, Joe, but you know, it just seems like that we are bombarded, as you said, from so many different sources, and I'm seeing it with my kids. You know, I've got a 10, 12, and soon-to-be 14-year-old, and they are getting information overload, and it's just coming at them from all directions, and so what's one of the biggest things that you see in the application of being brief? What is one of the biggest things you see where you've seen people actually use your techniques and the things that you've structured and built to help people be better at communication? What's one of the standout things you see and how they've used and applied it?
One of the things that come to mind is giving people a progress report, an update. You know, in business, and this actually is true at home. You know, you ask your kids, like, how was school? That's a type of progress report.
Yeah.
Where in work, people knocking your door, and you're like, hey, do you got a minute? And I want to give you an update on what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you ask people, how's it going? And they'll say, fine. That's too brief because you're not saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
So a great application of brevity is taking the time to prepare to have a really concise and clear, so it's both those things, answer to that question that has some meat to it. So I give people practice, opportunities to practice when they walk through that door is to speak in a headline. And the headline is, like a journalist would, is what is the headline that answers that question? How is it going? And we're ahead of schedule, or I'm really confident that we're going to meet the deadline. Hmm. Or I feel like we're under budget for this, you know, we're not funded well enough to be able to achieve the goal. Whatever that might be, people think about that in advance, and then they walk through the door, and then they give the brief explanation. And it's so satisfying to the manager and, you know, to a parent, too. Imagine if your child walked in from school, and how was school? It's like, you know, that was the best day I had in a month. How different the conversations are after that. So I think that progress report or that update is a really great application of brevity.
Well, the ironic thing there, Joe, is that by being ready and being brief and being prepared, that it actually, ironically, leads to more conversation because it kind of sparks. It's almost like you've really sharpened the point of the conversation that you start with, and it kind of pierces the other side and kind of gets a conversation maybe a little bit more engaging. And so do I tell my kids then when I'm dropping off for school, okay, here's the deal. When I pick you up or when I see you tonight, I'm going to ask you about your day. So I want you to think about it on the way home or when you're on the bus or whatever the case may be. Be thinking about it because I'm going to ask. So I kind of prompt them to be prepared.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it. That may or may not work because they may forget or life happens. But I think one of the ways of getting them to give a really concise answer is asking the question, well, what was the best part of your day?
Okay.
Or what was the worst part of you to ask questions in an extreme because it forces them to think about, okay, what an answer versus just an open-ended question. The same is true. Your point about like that really it pierces the issue and invites a longer conversation is absolutely the case.
Hmm.
If you think about a newspaper that has a really good headline invites you to read the whole story.
Yeah, they got to get your attention.
So it really is this moment of preparation. I found that there's three tendencies that people have when they struggle with this, and if you overcome any one of these three things, you can see a difference right away. One is a tendency of overexplaining.
Hmm.
And that happens quite a bit where people want to show how smart they are and how much they know, but they don't need to show all that at once. The second is just under-preparing, not taking the time to think about, well, what is the point of my update or how is it going? And then the third thing is just really thinking in terms of a point. If I had to frame the idea in a singular way, what would that be? And if those three things are present or any one of those three things are present, you can start to see a difference in people managing other people's inattention.
Excellent. So, and you've got your five brief absolutes that I have, of course, my cheat sheet here that I know what they are, but for our listeners, why don't you just walk us through real quick and then we'll grab a break and we'll come back.
Well, you know, if you want to team me up with each one of them, I could just comment on that.
All right, well, let's do this. We'll grab a break and we'll come back and cover it with you, Joe. Hold on. Joseph McCormick, ladies and gentlemen, our guest today. And you see how crisp and clean that conversation is? It's like a can of Sprite popping open and you hear it crisp and keen and no caffeine. TheBriefLab.com is the website and the book, Brief, Make a Bigger Impact by Saying Less. We'll be right back with Joe. Stay right there.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be done in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals, couples, and families plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his client's shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. If you'd like to learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. No cost or obligation. Or visit PlanStronger.com.
All right, welcome back. Joseph McCormick on the line with us, ladies and gentlemen. Author of the book, the one I've been talking about. I really admire what Joe's done here. The book, Brief, Make a Bigger Impact by Saying Less. More information over at TheBriefLab.com. And you know, we continue to learn, Joe, and one of the things is to be brief and pay attention. So let's walk through your five brief absolutes. These are the real kickers, the key points. Number one, you talked about it before the break, take time to prepare. We've all heard speakers that you can tell they prepared and the ones that try to do it off the cuff. Number two, what's next? Have a point?
Yeah, I mean, the key here is people are listening for in conversations for what your point is, and if you haven't thought about what your point is, they might have a different takeaway.
Yeah.
And when you're in an important meeting or you're having sending an email or you're on the phone with somebody and you haven't thought about what your point is, they may take away a different one.
Yeah, or their takeaway is, golly, he had me on the phone for 15 minutes and he had no point.
Exactly. It was pointless.
Right? That's not good. All right, and then number three, trim it down.
So the level of detail that people could process mentally, you want to think, what is the essential detail that they absolutely need to know, and what's the things that they might be likely to throw away? There's a famous writer that said the key to being a concise writer is to leave out the parts that people typically skip.
Hmm.
So trimming excess detail is essential, because you're just honing their attention on the most important and not having them just throw things away mentally. You don't want to have people do that, because it's exhausting, especially when they're overloaded with information as it is.
Absolutely. Again, it's all about piercing and getting through to somebody. And, you know, I write a weekly column for my local paper on financial and money topics, Joe. And every week, you know, it pops out at about 450 or so words. But it doesn't start that way. It starts weighing in at about 900 pounds, and we got to cut it back down to 450 words, and that really is to get some of what you just described, some of the fluff and stuff that people are going to read over, and I might have just written to get the thought out of my head, and then Christina in my office does a good job of helping me trim it down. So, I mean, that you got to do that.
It's essential. People just, they don't have the mental muscle like they used to, so when you trim it in advance for them, you make it easier for them to really get to the point that you're trying to make. And then they start asking you more questions, you can add additional detail later, but you can't, you know, run the risk of them of losing them in the process, because their brain just can't do the work.
I'm with you. Well, and that goes to the number point four, active listening. You mean you actually have to pay attention when you're talking what the other person's responding?
It's that, and active listening is important, because one way of being brief is not talking, and when you're not talking, you should be listening. Mm. So that's one immediate benefit. People need to be heard, so that's key. The other part of active listening is knowing what matters to people. The only way for you to know what matters to someone is to listen to them. And when you do that, you start to really hone in on the things that matter to them and what drives them, and then you can find what the essential information that they need. So going back to the example of giving my boss an update, if I really actively listened to what those priorities are, then when I'm giving the update, I can focus on those and not try to take a broader, like, I have to tell everything because I don't know what matters.
Mm.
So active listening is actually a huge contributor to brevity, giving you a greater sense of what's essential, what's important, what drives people's attention.
Well, and I'm also thinking, Joe, you're spot on. I can see exactly what you're talking about. I'm also thinking of the feedback part, where, you know, when the person, you know, you can see the recognition in their eyes of your point, stop talking, or at least, you know, recognize that and maybe go to the next subject, or, you know, if they've got it, they've got it, and you got to stop. And sometimes we've all talked to somebody that just doesn't seem to be paying attention to our response to what they're saying.
Yeah, you see it in people's eyes. You've made the point, they get it, and then people, they go back to that tendency of over-explaining.
Hmm.
It's keep on hammering the nail in, and once you get to that point, you really just need to stop talking and then move on to the next thing, and that's where progress is made.
So, and that brings us to the fifth and final point, stop talking.
There's a little voice in people's head, whether they're giving a speech or they're on a conference call or in a conversation, wherever it might be, where the person might say to themselves, wow, am I interesting? And when you hear that voice,
oh boy,
in your head, you need to stop talking.
That's so funny.
So it's just when you practice any of those five things,
yeah,
about preparing and getting the point, trimming detail, any of those things, you start to see a noticeable difference where the conversations you have are more balanced.
Hmm. Interesting.
And people start to notice it. They start to notice a difference in you professionally, and that's where I feel very strongly that brevity can become something that defines a person's career.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's lacking in so many people.
I can see that. Well, see, I was listening, and then I stopped to listen to what you're going to say.
You're doing it already.
I'm trying, Joe. I can be taught. I'm still trainable. I'm getting laughs from Beth over here, but yes, that is true.
She's having fun too.
She's having a great time today. Listen, I've got to ask. Well, I'm going to grab another quick break, which will get her from stop laughing at me, and we'll come back. What I want to ask you about, Joe, and I'll tee it up for you. I'd like to get your perspective on how this applies to, you know, the more formal speeches. I've got a talk I've got coming up in about a month and a half, and I want to be prepared, but I don't want to overdo it. So I'm going to get some tips from you, Joe, while you're on the line. Hold right there. If you're just joining us, Joseph McCormick's our guest, thebrieflab.com, and the book, Brief, Make a Bigger Impact by Saying Less. We'll be right back after this quick break.
You wouldn't drop your car off for repair service without first getting an estimate, would you? Of course not. Then why would you treat your all-important investment portfolio any different? Overlooked fees can really add up. Here's an example. Did you know that an extra fee of 1% on a $100,000 portfolio would equal $10,000 after 10 years? That's a lot of money. Do you know how much you're paying in fees? Why don't you get a second opinion from David Holland and invest with confidence? Call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back. Joe, welcome back. And Beth is still laughing over here during the break. So
she's enjoying it.
She's having a great time. I hope our listeners are enjoying the program as well. If you're just joining us, Joseph McCormick is our guest. And he's the author of Brief, Make a Bigger Impact by Saying Less. And lots more information about Joe and his company over at thebrieflab.com. They have an online program, Brief Practitioner Program for managers. And it's a new online course and a lot of other great stuff that you might find helpful at thebrieflab.com. And I want to come back to the speech. So what makes, and this is kind of a little more of a general question, and I know part of what you're going to tell me, but I think a lot of people would benefit from this, Joe. What makes for a really strong speech? Let's say you've got, 10 minutes and you're talking about a particular subject or you want to make a great impact. What in your mind really are some of the standout things that, and I know that being brief is part of it. But
no, I think this might be surprise people. Think about it from their perspective. Put yourself in their seat for a minute. Mm-hmm. What are people craving in a speech? They're not craving more PowerPoint slides.
No.
They're not craving the presenter reading bullet points.
Thank you.
They're not craving its length or its theory. Here are a few things that they're craving in a great speech. They're craving an executive summary. What I mean by that is, tell me up front in 60 to 90 seconds what the entire speech is about. Give me the macro view. They want an executive summary. They don't want you to hold off until the end.
Okay.
Like up front. So you know exactly where you are and where you're going, that journey.
No
second
suspense.
Thing I think that they're just craving is they're craving stories. They love stories.
Okay.
Tell me a story. Tell me two. Tell me three. And the third thing I think they're craving is make it visual. Show me pictures. I want to see a video. I want to see images. If you have those things, if you have an executive summary that's a speech that's filled with stories, and it's visual, and you put yourself in their seats, who wouldn't love it? And it's like the famous Broadway saying, always leave them wanting more. If it's brief, great. But you will find that if you do those three things, they'll want you to keep on talking, which is exactly the point that you made earlier, which is brevity sometimes can be an invitation for longer conversations. So I think those are three things that they just absolutely crave.
Do you need to do the summary up front and then a summary at the end, or just one up front?
Yeah,
is
up front
good?
And the end. I mean, it's the same thing that you've heard, people have heard for many years, like, tell me what I'm going to tell you. Tell it to me and tell me what I told you.
Okay,
that executive summary,
yeah,
when people are inattentive, you can't assume that they're going to be able to pay attention for the whole speech.
Well, so that's
true. You have
to
summarize at the beginning.
Well,
that
especially if you're
know,
talking
okay,
after
I'm going
dinner.
From A to B, and this is how I'm going to get there. And then you show them how you got there. And they feel satisfied at the end. And you make it entertaining with some stories. And you make it visual. You're basically managing an attention. And that's what makes a good teacher. A good speech is people are holding and attentive because you're not assuming that they're going to listen. You're winning their attention.
I love that. That's actually very good, Joe. Managing their attentions, because sometimes you're giving a talk after lunch or dessert and coffee's on the table, and you're not only trying to manage their attention, you're competing for their attention.
Yeah, people think that if you're sitting in an audience, especially when you're giving a speech, that because they're there, they're a captive audience. Mentally, they're not captive. We look at attention spans. The average attention span has dropped from 12 to 8 seconds. People have this tendency of wanting to check their smartphones. So if you start to drone on, they're going to want to check their phone. In some cases, they do, right in the middle of the speech, so they can mentally check out even though they're physically still in the chair. So you have to manage their inattention, like as if mentally they're just going to walk out of the room, even though they're physically still present. So those, I think those are some things that give them what they want. They're craving those to be entertained, but also given insight. They want to hear a story that illustrates the point. They want it to be, summarized so that they understand, they're never lost. There's so many speeches that you just don't know where you are until the end. And I think that reveal at the end is, you know, that used to work years ago, but it doesn't work anymore.
Hmm. How important is it, Joe, to as part of this engagement with the audience? I mean, how important is it get that you're telling stories, you're painting pictures, you know, how important is it to engage them with some sort of either something that evokes a response or even has them respond audibly to you? You know, I mean, how important is it get them to actually...
It's extremely important. Okay. I think that learning has changed. Speech making has changed as well. It needs to be more experiential.
Mm.
So if you're talking to a group of people, I don't care if it's 10 people or 100 or 1,000, give them something to do. Have them take a break and partner up with the person next to them and talk for 60 seconds. Call on people. Have them stop you and ask questions throughout. You got to make them involved. It can't be one way. So the more experiential you can make it, the better, because people feel like they're involved. I mean, they're present. They're doing something. They're listening. It feels totally different to them.
Well, I tried to get your permission to be blunt before the break, so you turned that one down. But you did validate one for me, Joe, and that is when I do a financial seminar. I don't use PowerPoint slides. I don't have predetermined topics. I actually, my entire presentation is the questions that the audience, the people I've invited, that they come and they have questions, and I, you know, encourage them, and I turn the entire presentation into simply answering their questions. And you know what? They love it.
Well, that's an experience for them. These are things that they have on their mind, and you're tapping into. If I have that question, probably the person next to me has it too, and the people start realizing he understands us, and he's listening to us, and he's attentive, and it feels different to them, and that makes a great experience for them. They feel satisfied.
Well, and people tend to listen more closely.
Like that, right?
Yeah, and people tend to listen more closely, Joe.
Well, I mean, you're training them. When you're doing that, they're like, okay, he knows what matters to me. So, and going through these questions, they're like, well, that was very satisfying. I wonder what the next one is. And then you're really holding their attention, and they're going through it, and then time flies, and all of a sudden they didn't think it was that long, and now they were, you know, it's a different experience for them. It's not like you're talking at them, you're talking with them.
Yeah, interesting. Very good stuff, Joe. Tell me, we've got time for just a couple more topics we can hit here. We talked about speeches, we talked about presentations. How about in relationships? You know, there's always an ongoing it's discussion. It seems like every time we turn around, there's another take on communication, not only in the workplace, but in our home life or our social life. And, you know, how do you balance between being brief and giving people what you need them to hear or what you want them to hear, and then having it be a conversation, you know, an actual talking. I mean, you understand, how do you get that right balance?
I think that if you look at relationships, whether at work or at home, I think the right balance is, my analogy is, if communicating is more like tennis and less like golf. So you're not advancing your point. You say something, they say something back. There's comment, response, and it's always in balance. Hmm. There's always permission. There's two particular areas that I think that people can really benefit from brevity in creating that balance. And one is giving feedback. Sometimes you have to bring that to people's attention, like, you're doing something that's annoying me, or it's not productive, or whatever that might be. You really need to be brief, because people in that moment are heightened, their sensitivity is super heightened to, like, you're being critical, and you don't want to, and in that moment, people tend to drone on. It's like ripping a Band-Aid off very slowly. It's better to say it quickly, and say what you got to say, and then hear their response to that, their defense, or their comment. And then the flip side of that is actually ironic, but it's giving praise. And when there's a moment you have to say what you've got to say, and there's something that a person does that you really admire, you like, you want to call out, is also be brief and let them really enjoy that. You know, when you say how you appreciate them, or you're giving them, you're thanking them for something, both in the moment of maybe some critical feedback, but also in praise, brevity is very important, because you have to gauge the response. Let either that hurt kind of soak in and let them sort of gauge, okay, this is what it really means to me. And then also a moment of praise. In both cases, brevity is absolutely essential to building and strengthening a relationship.
There's a bit of the workplace progress report when it comes to relationships. You know, it's like, at the end of the day, hey, here's what I did, and it's kind of like a report. You know, I don't know, maybe I could try that with my wife. I could say, can you give me a progress report when you get home? And see how that would work.
What's when you look at the relationships you're building with your boss or at home, these are things like, okay, what's one thing I can work on? You see, the brevity of that is it's one thing.
I'm not asking that question.
Yeah, it's a scary one to ask, but if the answer with brevity and with concern, like I really want you to be better, it's taken differently.
True,
and the same thing is, what's one thing that I'm good at? And that begins the basis of a strong relationship with superior and teams at home, where that communication becomes balanced. It's not like somebody's dominating. I've seen that this creates an opening for people where they can have breakthroughs in their relationships, both at work and at home, because people are tempering themselves.
See, I'd have to try it, Joe, where I'd have to say, all right, if you could change one thing, or there's one thing I could work on, because I don't want to open the door for too many suggestions.
Just one thing. It's scary, but one thing's better than 10.
if you could just let one horse out. I don't want them all running out.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. But those are one thing that I can prove to make me a better person. So that the person's doing it out of concern, because they want you to be better, not because they're trying to be critical. And it's brief. It really is there. It feels different. It takes the sting out of it. And I found that to be the case with managers, because who wants a boss that drones on and on and hammers and hammers and hammers? You want a boss that wants to make you better. And the same thing goes with other relationships in people's lives. And brevity is a key to that.
Excellent. Excellent, Joe. Well, I'm so glad we had an opportunity to get you back on the program. Joseph McCormick,
likewise,
ladies and gentlemen. You see why we invited him back. Just right on the money. TheBrieflab.com is the website. Brief, make a bigger impact by saying less. And a new online program, especially for managers, on the website, online course. It's called Brief Practitioner Program. Joe, you're welcome back anytime. Enjoyed it. And we'll stay tuned in to what you got going on and call us back and we'll do it again.
Thanks for having me.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.